If your happy ending is no more joint pain, please try Sierra Sil. With a money-back guarantee, it's all-natural joint pain relief that's changed our lives. Sierra, like the mountains, and Sil, like silicon. Go to sierrasil.com. Use the code TRIFT for 10% off. Hello, I'm Erin, and welcome to Drift. In this story, we're going to take you to the English seaside for a gentle adventure, sure to warm your heart and usher you into sweet dreams. Made possible by Envy Pillow. It's a Canadian-designed ergonomic pillow that cradles your face and aligns your spine, and was created by Kathy and Kim, two registered nurses, with your health and the planet in mind. Learn more in the morning at Envy, E-N-V-Y, pillow.com. Thank you for sharing some time here. And just before we get going, let's take a few deep breaths. Inhale, feeling the life entering your body. And exhale, letting go of the tightness in your shoulders, your jaw, your neck, wherever you hold the troubles of the day. Now, one more inhale. And as you exhale, think these words: I am safe. I am loved. I am at peace. And if you're ready, let's drift. There was once a gallant ship, some 3 feet in length, with full equipment of white sails and sturdy masts, but it had never seen the sea. It had cast anchor, so to speak, nearly a year before our story begins, in the tailor's nursery. A very pleasant, airy room with nice pictures on the wall, but not one of them of the sea. In fact, Mrs. Taylor was very much afraid of the water, of her children being near a lake or a pond even, on account of the dangers of damp feet and catching cold. She was a delicate creature, often ailing, and most of the children took after her. The doctor visited often, but fortunately, Dr. Hammond lived just next door, and Walter Hammond, the doctor's eldest boy, was Harry Taylor's dearest friend. The two boys were about 8 years old, went to the same school, spent most of their play hours together, and intended to go to the sea together when they were old enough. Harry had heard and read a great deal about sailor life and adventures, and had inspired Walter with the same admiration. Besides, his uncle Jack, Mr. Taylor's brother, who had made the ship for his little nephew, had often told him stories about the sea, which he treasured. Walter Hammond, unlike his friend, was a strong, bright, merry fellow, never a day in the house or away from school. But he was very fond of Harry, just the same. Walter spent a great deal of his spare time in the tailor's nursery, where the two boys studied and examined the Rover. They had taken down its sails and rigging and masts over and over again. They knew every inch of its planks, every nail and screw about its framework. They often spoke about the delight of launching it in real live water, in the wide blue sea, perhaps. That would be something worth living for. Walter had been to the seaside once with his father and could describe every detail to Harry: the sand, the swimmers, the rocks, everything. But their small town of Rosehampton was far away from this enchanting ocean, and there seemed no chance of Mrs. Taylor letting her children brave the perils of a month near the sea. "It makes me quite nervous to think of Harry falling over the rocks or getting into boats," and Bobby and Frank getting their feet wet constantly on the shore when they are so subject to bronchitis. Her husband would sigh and say nothing, for he was an easygoing man who did not interfere with his wife's management of house or children. "Mama," said Harry one day, "how is it that Uncle Jack never catches cold? And besides, he has never been drowned." "Hush, Harry, you don't know what may happen to your uncle yet. And I do wish he wouldn't tell you all those long stories about the sea when he comes. They make me quite miserable." "I love them, Mama," cried Harry, "and so does Walter. And Walter and I are both going to be sailors when we grow big. Only I do wish we could sail the Rover first in real seawater. It would look so splendid." "Oh, Harry, don't go on talking about being a sailor, for your papa and I will never hear of it. You are going to help your father in the warehouse when you grow big. But if you are a good boy till next holidays, I promise to take you all to Kingshaven, and you shall sail your ship as much as you like. It is a nice, safe place with lovely sands, if the sea can ever be said to be safe." Harry listened in silent amazement. His crushed hopes as to sailor life were for the moment completely forgotten in the near and enchanting prospect held out to him in its place. But Walter, Mama," he cried, "how can I sail it without Walter?" "Ask Walter to come with us. I think he'll be very glad." Well, Harry ran to tell Walter, who was equally overjoyed at the idea of going to Kingshaven with the tailors. So they set to work and once more thoroughly overhauled the good ship Rover to see if it was watertight and ready for its first voyage. Summer holidays at last came round, and Mrs. Taylor, who had been busy packing up and arranging things for some weeks, was ready to close up the house for a whole month, and, with the family, set off for Kingshaven. It was a long way off, some 30 or 40 miles, so it was quite like an adventure to Harry Taylor and his little brothers and sisters, and even to Walter Hammond, whose father was busy, and therefore would have had only a few days in the country now and then. Harry had helped his mother all the day before the departure, and once, when carrying a heavy box down from the attic, he had bumped it heavily against his knee. All through the afternoon and night, a strange, dull pain in the knee haunted him. He did not tell anybody, but he so wished it would go away before he got to Kingshaven. There stood the Rover, all nicely packed and ready for the railway journey, and Harry's heart pounded when he thought how soon he should see it riding proudly on the waves, admired by all. Harry wakened early on the Saturday morning of their trip with a sudden shoot of pain as he moved his knee that made him fall back on his pillow and almost scream for help. He resisted, however, and began to examine again the sore spot. There was swelling, but the black and blue he'd seen last night were nearly gone. The thing had rather too white a look, but Harry took this for a good sign and hoped it would be all right before long. He got up and dressed, slowly and with difficulty, hiding from his mother's sharp eyes that anything was wrong. Walter came round, and soon the whole party was off. After a long but pleasant journey, they reached the busy seaside resort of Kingshaven, a brisk, rising small town frequented by families in search of bathing and safe boating and other water fun. Friary Cottage, which Mrs. Taylor had booked for the month, stood so far up in the town that there was no view of the sea whatever from its windows. Still, it was a very nice, modest, comfortable cottage with a pleasant yard. "Oh, Mama, what a nice place Kingshaven is," said Harry, quite enthusiastically. "I'm sure I should never weary here, even if we were to stay a whole year." Harry was to have a longer time at Kingshaven than he imagined. And perhaps, if he could have foreseen everything, he would not have spoken so very confidently of never wearying. Mr. and Mrs. Taylor were very glad to see all their children so happy. "I must come down on Monday morning to the shore before going home," Mr. Taylor said to the boys, as he saw them carrying their boat, "and see the good ship Rover's first voyage. It will be quite a sight."
"Oh, we're all coming," added his wife. "None of us would miss it.
And if no one falls over the rocks, I'm sure everything will go well." By the time they got thoroughly settled in their new home, it was getting quite late in the day, so there was only time for a saunter all along the beach and the main streets of Kingshaven. Harry had some difficulty walking now, but so anxious was he for Monday's launch that he kept his pain to himself. Walter and he had selected one delightful rock, stretching far out into the sea, from which to make the first trial trip of the Rover. There were lots of boys already there, sailing their tiny boats, but none of them had anything the least like the Rover.
"We'll call it a pirate ship, Walt," cried Harry excitedly, "and it will be grand to see it chasing the little boats all about. What a splendid thing the sea is! Oh, I wish we could always be beside it."
Walter agreed.
"Yes," he said, "the Rover is the perfect name for a pirate ship. Let's be up in good time on Monday morning, Harry, and be down here for a first venture by ourselves, you know, in case it doesn't work right and people laugh." Harry was not sorry when his mother gave the order for everybody to go home and get to bed so as to have a good, sound sleep. His mother called out to Harry as she hurried about getting Bobby and Frank, Lucy and Janie put to bed in the tiny nursery at Briary Cottage.
"Run after Walter and see that you two boys have a good scrub. The bath is ready for you. Then get into Blanket Bay as fast as you can. Hurry!"
Harry made his way upstairs to the back attic, where Walter and he and the Rover were moored. Early next morning, the Sunday, Walter Hammond knocked at Mrs. Taylor's door.
"Could you come and look at Harry's knee?" he asked in a rather frightened voice. "We think there's something wrong with it."
Mrs. Taylor ran to the attic and found poor Harry lying in excruciating pain and with a great white swelling on his knee, which she knew was no ordinary bruise or sprain.
"My boy," she cried, "why didn't you tell me sooner?"
Well, Harry began to cry. It had been such a strain to keep up hour after hour that it was quite a relief at last to have the very worst fully confessed.
"I thought it would go away, Mama," he said, "or I would have told you, and I was so anxious to be well just now for the sea. And oh, I can't move one single step."
"Don't cry, dear. We'll send for the doctor and see what he says. He'll make it better before long. And don't fret, or you'll make yourself worse." With that, Mrs. Taylor had the nearest medical man sent for. Dr. Bell came and pronounced poor Harry's a very grave case of what is known as white swelling, brought on by the hurt he had received, but chiefly owing to the young boy's very delicate system.
"He must lie quite still for some weeks at least," said the doctor. "There must be no trying to get up or move about until I give permission."
Poor Harry! This was awful news, and he did not then know that he would yet be thankful one day for a lesson taught him
by this very trouble.
But indeed, we very seldom know such things until the time of trial is long past.
Walter was moved down to a sofa bed in the parlor so as to give Harry more room and air in the attic. Harry lay there day after day, barely daring even to sit half up in bed for meals, and forced to lie mostly on his back. And there stood the unfortunate ship, Rover, whose pirate wanderings had also been cruelly frustrated. It stood on a table just below the skylight, so that Harry could see it easily where he lay. But now, the sight just added to his pain. Would he ever be able to sail it before they left and returned to Rosehampton? It didn't seem very likely. Their kind friend and Walter's father, Dr. Hammond, came down at once on hearing of Harry's illness and confirmed Dr. Bell's verdict that Harry must continue in the quiet quarters of Blanket Bay, as his mother called it. The unfortunate thing of this Blanket Bay was that it did not look to the sea, nor indeed to anything, but the sky. But do you know, the days passed wonderfully. Harry was fond of reading, and plenty of nice books were brought for him, while Walter did the best he could to amuse himself companionless, or with any boys who seemed friendly and ready to play with him. He did all he could to amuse Harry, too, by coming home with stories of all he had seen, and would sit for hours on the bedside, chatting to him, if allowed. But Mrs. Taylor said it was wrong to waste his holidays that way, and generally packed him off to the shore again. Harry Taylor knew Walter was also greatly disappointed not to see the Rover floated, but the idea of his telling Walter to take the Rover down himself to the rocks and have the delight of seeing it ride proudly on the waves? Oh, that was too much for Harry. He had read of Sir Philip Sidney passing the cup of water from his own parched lips to the dying soldier who had greater need of it than himself, and he had thought it a grand and beautiful action. But then, it had never occurred to him that in his own little common life, the everyday life of home and school, deeds of the same kind of heroism were possible or even required of him. And everyone who wished to lead a brave and noble life. It was not till nearly 2 weeks had come and gone, half the time they were to spend at Kingshaven, that some words of his father's got Harry thinking of this very subject, and the thing struck him as it had never done before. Mr. Taylor had come down at the end of the week, as he always did, to spend Sunday with his family and to see how his sick boy was getting on. He stood looking at the Rover for a while that Saturday night, and then said, before leaving the room, "By the way, you've never got your grand ship sailed yet. What will Uncle Jack say when he hears of it?" "But couldn't Walter there sail it? It's a sort of pity he shouldn't have some pleasure out of it, isn't it?"
"Oh, Papa!" cried Harry, as if in pain.
"Why, what is it?" said his father, alarmed at the crimson color rising in his son's face. "Is it your knee, my boy?"
"No, no, Papa," said Harry, rather embarrassed. "It's what you said. You know, it is my ship, my very own. How could I let Walter or anyone else sail it when I can't even look out and see it?" Mr. Taylor was greatly surprised by this speech, but he was a good-natured, easy-going man, never wanting to upset anybody if he could help it.
"Oh, I see," he said. "You don't want to let it go. Well, then you must just act dog in the manger, if you will, my boy. It is for you to judge. You shall do exactly as you like with your boat, my son.
and I bet it won't be so very long before you and Walter will be able to go down to the beach together. So, good night, son, and sleep sound. But he did not. Harry Taylor lay awake for quite some time that night, thinking over the words his father had carelessly dropped. Dog in the manger. What did that mean exactly? Though he had heard the phrase more than once, he had never stopped to think about it. But Harry remembered the time he had been staying in the country with some cousins at a farm. They all laughed one day at Riley, a tiny Skye terrier that had gotten into one of the mangers in the stable and kept at a respectable distance the good old pony to which it belonged, barking at him and refusing to allow him his own breakfast. And Riley could not, of course, enjoy it himself, chopped hay and oats not being in his diet. No, it seemed the only pleasure Riley derived from this performance lay in keeping the old pony from its breakfast. Ah, now Harry understood the words perfectly. And though it had been laughable enough in the case of Riley, Harry felt that it was not quite as amusing when practiced by rational beings. True, he was only keeping that which belonged to him only to himself, whereas Master Riley had taken what was not his. There was that difference. Still, something did not sit right with Harry. He was usually a kind, unselfish sort of boy. And he did not enjoy feeling that he was now doing something rather miserly. Early next morning, Harry sent for Walter to come and speak to him. "Walt," he said very cheerily, "the Rover is going to make its first voyage today. Hooray! Aren't you glad?" Walter stared at his friend and wondered if he had grown suddenly worse and was talking nonsense through his feverishness. "I doubt they will let you out to the beach just yet, Hal," he said calmly. "No, indeed," said Harry, smiling brightly. "But you are going to take the ship down for me and launch her and all that. Bobby and Frank and the girls will go too. And then you'll come back and tell me all about it, won't you, Walt?" "Nonsense, Harry," cried his friend. "Why, we couldn't do it without you. It would be no fun at all. It's your ship, too. Now don't say another word about it." But Harry was stubborn. And in time, Walter felt that to refuse further would only upset him. "Well, if you really want me to, Harry," he said reluctantly. "But won't you feel bad when I take the good ship away from your room? You've often said it was quite a companion to you when we're all out." "Not a bit," cried Harry bravely. "I'm tired of seeing the old thing on dry land. I'm dying to know how it floats. And you'll come home and tell me all about it. Tell me if there were people looking on, and if the flags looked great when they were waving out at sea, and all that. I want to hear what everybody says about it, and if they think the Rover as fine a boat as they have ever seen at the Shelf Rock before. So you see, Walt, you must hurry and be off with it, or I'll be angry, and that will be sure to make me worse again. I can't believe I never thought of this before. It was awfully stupid of me, that's for sure." His eyes sparkled brightly now, all the brighter, perhaps, because he had just dashed away some childish tears, for he was very young, you must remember, and also weak from his illness. He wanted to make his tiny bit of self-sacrifice bravely and cheerfully, feeling that a grudging manner of giving sadly tarnishes a gift. Mr. and Mrs. Taylor were very pleased at hearing what Harry had planned for the others, especially as it had come entirely from himself. He had certainly not been urged to do it in any way.
It had not even been suggested to him.
Well, a large and enthusiastic crowd of youths gathered round the shelf rock that afternoon to watch the good ship Rover make her first voyage on the deep. And beautifully indeed did she spread her white sails to the breeze. Guided by a string secured in Walter's hand, her graceful form cut the waves or danced lightly over them, her bright red flags floating gracefully from stern and mast. It was quite a long time before the excitement of this first voyage wore away. Each of the children had in turn to get a hold of the guiding string, and great amusement was caused by one of the wooden doll sailors tumbling overboard and bobbing about among the creeks and crannies of shelf rock. At last, the toy sailor was rescued by means of a butterfly net, and the little man was found to be just fine. Oh, you can imagine what a grand story all this made to tell poor Harry, lying in his little bed under the skylight, with his back to the sea and all the wonders it held. And no one was more delighted with the whole affair than Harry himself, feeling quite a weight off his mind now that he shed that nasty dog-in-the-manger sort of feeling. How he laughed about the poor sailor man, and Harry took him into his own hands to make sure he was just fine. All in all, this was one of the happiest days Harry had spent at Kingshaven. Every day now, the children took out the Rover, and they all spent many happy hours with it. Next week, a visitor was announced. It was Uncle Jack himself, and along with him came the biggest, bulkiest parcel you could ever imagine. When it was opened, it proved to be a first-rate sort of reclining wheelchair, quite an invention of Uncle Jack's own brilliant genius. Dr. Bell said it was the very thing for his patient, who would be able to ride in it soon. Dr. Hammond also was greatly pleased with this new conveyance when he came down. Various short trial trips in the yard were made in this chair, and how the patient did enjoy the fresh, sweet summer air, fragrant with honeysuckle and sweet briar. And even more delightful was the whiff of strong salt wafting up from the shore. Harry felt he would soon be well and strong again if he could have such nice rides as this every day. At first, his knee did hurt considerably, even at the tiniest motion. But gradually, as he got healthier and stronger, this wore away, and he could be pushed quite a long distance and then left out in some nice sheltered spot with his book beside him, just to drink in the health-giving breezes. Uncle Jack's own strong, steady hand was usually the one which drove him about. It seemed to please the kind sailor to do as much for his young nephew, and no one could push the chair so well, Harry thought, for he never felt much pain when Uncle Jack was in charge. Eventually, Walter was allowed to try his skill at it, and he was very proud and happy to do so. The best days were those when Harry could be taken right down to the shore and set upon one of the more sheltered rocks, but only when the weather was dry and sunny and not too windy. One very fine afternoon, quite a large party assembled at the shelf rock. There was Harry in his chair, right in the center of the group, Bobby and Freddie, Janie and Lucy, dancing around him, Mama with a lunch basket close by, and Papa, Uncle Jack, Walter, and Dr. Hammond, all there to enjoy the family picnic. But before the feast was spread, the good ship Rover was to be launched once more, and that was done by Uncle Jack's well-skilled hands.
after which he put the guiding string in Harry's white little hand and told him to hold it firm. Harry's eyes sparkled and his cheeks became rosy, for he felt the full pleasure of this moment, free from any mean or selfish thought. After all this, Mr. Taylor began to think it would be best just to let Harry stay all summer at Kingshaven. So he got them another cottage, this one closer to the sea. Walter, of course, had to go back to school, and he felt sad every day now since Harry wasn't there. However, next year, Harry managed to make it up to him again, being so much stronger then. And in due time, the two boys went to Rugby together, remaining best friends as before. But we're going on too fast. Let us look back first to the small seaside cottage, where Harry is so happy, never wearying of Kingshaven, as indeed he had declared he never would, even when he couldn't have predicted how long his stay was to be. He is taken out to the beach every day by careful hands and is gathering strength bit by bit. Often he is carried over to the shelf rock, from there to guide with his own hand the beautiful gliding movements of his pretty ship. Harry feels that this time of trial has been a blessing to him, since it has saved him from growing into a jealous or selfish boy. And he looks back with pleasure on a sight he did not even see, the first voyage of the good ship Rover. And as we set off on smooth waters now, into the most beautiful sunset of reds and golds, I wish you a good voyage, a good night, and sweet dreams.